the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals with my co-host, Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and also one of the hosts of the original draft breakdown podcast. It is preseason week. This is episode 449. Guys, if you've been listening and you haven't subscribed yet, please do. We're nearly at 450 shows, but anyway, Seth, we're actually wrapping up training camp. So by the time this hits, we're recording Tuesday night, the Cardinals have one public practice left on Wednesday, and then we'll have a preseason game on Friday, and then we'll go back to the bubble, back to Tempe, getting ready for the final two preseason games, and then the roster cuts and all that. Can you believe that we're like there already?
Yeah, it's just going to be really interesting this year with the one cut down date, right? Like, it's just going to make our job easy / hard all at once, right?
I wonder if teams will still, because teams would, there would be a handful of players, and I think they usually, it kind of out of respect for the players to.
I was going to say, usually veterans, right? That they're like, oh, you're not going to make the roster, so.
Or a young guy that they were particularly fond of. They're like, let's see if you can latch on somewhere before cut downs or whatever. But yeah, and like maybe that'll still happen. But yeah, honestly, I kind of get why they do this, is because when you had to cut down the roster to 75 and then play a final preseason game where you weren't playing 20 of your guys anyway, it made it very, very difficult to manage your roster for that. You know, basically that final preseason game, it is a bit of a joke of a game, but you know, it's that final audition for all those guys that are about to be cut.
Right. And you look at it and you think about it, and you know, it's one of those situations where with the 17 games, I know they cut it down to 13. It just feels like it would make sense to get to 12, right? And space out the games and do one, you know, like this weekend, and then have like a mini bye week, do one the next Thursday and Friday, and then give you 10 days really to get ready for the start of the season. But, you know, they still want those 20 game ticket packages.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I will say this, that I'm so pleased about how they changed the schedule around to where cut down day, like roster cut down, is not at a Saturday. This is you know, media complaining, because the Cardinals on a Saturday afternoon would have all of the reporters hostage on a Saturday afternoon where they got plans with their families. You know, 1 o'clock is cut down day, but then they wouldn't release their cuts till like after 4 p.m. It was just,
I
was
going to say, the 4 o'clock ones. So.
And so now it's on a Tuesday, you know, it comes at a decent hour, you know, we're doing our primary jobs, and then at, you know, oh, we'll just get the roster cuts, and usually it's already about the time, and it works out. So we are, none of you guys will care about that. I mean, this is that beginning part of the podcast where you probably are always scrolling forward about 3 minutes in until you actually get the meat and potatoes. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to actually talk about this preseason game. We've got three main topics that we're going to go over. We will have a second show this week. I'm going to try and get on that. Will probably be a solo show where I focus on the preseason opener, what we want to see, any last news that are coming up. And I'll record that either Wednesday night or Thursday night so that it's fresh for you guys to listen to on game day on Friday. But so first topic we're going to talk about is because there was a roster move. We'll talk, rather than talking about, so we've got the depth chart we're going to talk about Isaiah Simmons and some comments he made when he spoke to the media about his position change and also about the depth chart. But let's lead with the addition of a running back. We kind of have been waiting for an addition to the running back room for months. It felt like there's no way they're just going to go into the season with James Conner and a bunch of guys who have proven nothing in the NFL. As much as, you know, people like Keonta Ingram, Corey Clement's basically a special teams guy. He's had a couple hundred rushing yards in his season. But didn't it feel like we were just waiting for the day when they signed Kareem Hunt? That's what we all thought. Kareem Hunt was the name that made sense. He was at the Browns with Drew Petzing. Like, he kept going unsigned, and so it just felt that. But it wasn't Kareem Hunt. And the name that we got is Marlon Mack. How surprised were you, or how long had you been waiting for a veteran back, and how surprised were you that it was Mack that they signed?
I was a little surprised. I mean, I guess he was there when Jonathan Gannon was in Indy, correct? So that,
yeah, he was there in fact, his two good years in 2018, 2019 were when Gannon was there in Indy.
Yeah. And he was there. So, you know, it does make a little bit of sense. At least he has some familiarity. I mean, obviously Hunt with Petzing. Let me ask you this. I mean, is that an indictment of Hunt, or what maybe Petzing thought of Hunt, that's where they went instead? I mean, because
I think it comes down to
money.
What the contract numbers come out, because he was in New Orleans, was about to do the workout, the Indy called, offered him more money. Once we find out what the contract was, that might make all the sense. Like, if it's a $3 to $4 million deal, or even a $2.5 to $4 million deal, I'm pretty sure all Mack is getting is the league minimum.
Well, and we have to be completely honest too. I mean, this guy hasn't been good in four seasons. So
no,
I mean,
that's the
since that 2019 season, he hasn't really been any good. And so he's dealt with a lot of injuries and stuff. So I don't even know if this was more just like a let's see what he's got.
Right. I couldn't tell with it. Once we get the contract numbers, it might make a little bit of sense. Like, we got the numbers in for Jeff Swaim, the tight end that they got. And he got and it wasn't an expensive deal, but he got, what, I think $350,000, $450,000 in guaranteed money and in a signing bonus. And it was $1.7 million for the year, which is half what he made last year. But that wasn't just a league minimum. Like, even Pat Elflein, it was a pocket, you know, it was a, now granted, we're talking tens of thousand dollars. I think it was like a $25 signing bonus. Like, woohoo, that sounds like nothing NFL wise. We know that someone gave us $25,000 here to sign. Like, that's absurd to us. But, and then he gets a roster bonus if he makes the team, but there's like no risk with Elflein. Swain, they're counting on. Elflein, it doesn't sound like they're counting on him. They're just like, you're going to compete and we'll see what happens. Mack, I'm interested to see where the numbers come in, because I think Kareem Hunt, once we can find those numbers, is that we'll realize the reason why Hunt wasn't signed is because he was playing the long game. He didn't want to sign for the league minimum. He wanted to sign for something more than that, and they needed, like, a team had to have a need for that to happen. And it just happened to be that Alvin Kamara got suspended three games. Eno Benjamin, you know, tore his Achilles. And then that created just enough leverage for him to get a better offer from Indy.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see where Hunt ends up. I assume by the time this is released, we will probably know. But if not, you know, it's a fun conversation to have. But yeah. It'll be interesting to see how this all kind of works out and how the running back room looks on day one, because I think most of us are expecting, what, 80 to 90% usage from James Conner this year.
Which worries me to frickin' heck.
Well, yeah, because he's never been able
He was like, please have something. But here's the thing. Like Marlon Mack, and after the signing happened, now I remember Indy Marlon Mack. I'm like, oh, okay, that's a nice signing. And then the buzz online is like, we've got our number two back. And then I looked up the numbers since 2020. Now, granted, he tore his Achilles in 2020. And then that's hard. So it's hard to come. But since 2020,
it can be a 2-year kind of
15 games, 15 games since 2020, 211 yards. 15 games, 211 yards. He's basically like that 1,000-yard season, that usage that he got. I don't know if the usage is related to then the injury the next year, but the wheels fell off of his career. And here's the sad thing. You know, we're recording on Tuesday night. What happened Tuesday? He got hurt on his third day of practice. And walking boot on his left. So it sounds like it's on a walk, probably an ankle. So it looks like he injured his left ankle. And whatever that means, unless it's... Oh, like, remember when Corey Peters signed? He had recovered from the one Achilles. And then before he'd even played a game with the Cardinals, he blew out his other Achilles in training camp.
Right.
Let's hope it's not that, but...
Well, and you mentioned the 15 games, but more of an indictment than the 15 games is this dude has 48 carries the last 3 years.
And wasn't
15 games.
Look, wasn't like 15 of those in one game for the 49ers last year?
Yeah, probably. Let me look real quick. I got his whole career pulled up. So, I mean, it just makes it one of those situations where... So he had last year, no, he didn't have any for the 49ers. It was the year before.
Oh, okay.
In Indy, he had 10 carries. So he had 4 carries in 2020. That's when he blew the Achilles.
Last year, he didn't have more than 5 carries in a game.
In a game. Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. Like, it just feels like a lot to ask him, right?
and undoubtedly. A healthy Mac is probably their best non-James Conner option, probably. But the problem
we just haven't seen it in 4 years.
Now, granted, was the signing because they were just – like, Keontae Ingram's been out. Now, he's going to – good old Jonathan Gannon telling us, he's got a nick. You'll see him back out there soon. He's so bad. Like, come on, JG. Stop that. Like, stop that. I mean, you don't have to tell us injuries. The league doesn't require it, but why not? So, yeah, so Ingram's out right now. Mac's out, and so you're left in this. As we're coming on preseason week, you've got Corey Clement, Tyson Williams, Amari DeMarcado, and James Conner. And I don't want to see James Conner take more than a couple of series. I guess Tyson Williams. We're going to see a healthy, healthy dose of Tyson Williams and Amari DeMarcado.
Yeah, and that makes sense. I mean, you want to get those guys a look. You don't want to overwork Ingram either. So it'll just be interesting to see how it all kind of plays out, right?
Yeah, and I doubt that Ingram even plays because he's been out for the last week and a half.
Yeah.
That's no good. But so, Mac, I like-ish the move. I wish they had gotten somebody more reliable, I guess.
Yeah, just healthier. I mean, we can say that. Just somebody that's been healthier the last couple seasons. Like, when you're talking about usage, and we're talking the insane usage that is being thrown around with James Conner, you just want somebody that you can trust, and then somebody that you can rely on to be healthy. And so, Ingram's one of those guys you just can't trust because he's never done it in the NFL. And again, we haven't seen a healthy Marlon Mack since
2019.
So,
like, he played the one game in 2020 before the Achilles went out. But, geez. And so, yeah, I'm like, nice if. And this is something you say, injured players stay injured. And running back is a position that I have to look, and Blake's probably got this somewhere, but once a running back starts suffering injuries, they don't come back. They don't really bounce back to the previous level. They basically stay banged up. That's what it feels like for the rest of their career.
Right. And it's just the wear and tear. So we'll see how, like we said, we'll see how it works out, but it's just an interesting decision to make based on what we've been kind of talking about.
Yeah. Coming next on the Rise of Seaward podcast, Best Serve Cardinals Talk and Loyal. Let's talk about the depth chart. What, if anything, is surprising? If there's anything that stands out, that's coming to next on Rise of Seaward. We're back on the Rise of Seaward podcast, the Best Serve Cardinals Talk on the web. The Cardinals released their first depth chart of the preseason. Technically, it's unofficial. It's put together by the media relations team, which I'm sure has a little bit of input from the coaching staff, but doesn't necessarily reflect what it is.
Wait, I thought this was the official thing.
Well, it's the Cardinals depth chart. It's released by the team, but they're always considered, even during the regular season, I guess they're considered unofficial. Because
right.
They're prepared this like as prepared by the teams. So this is like Chris Melvin and Imani Suber putting this together, and Mike Helm, they're putting it together, as opposed to the actual coaching staff putting it together. So for me, there weren't many surprises. I mean, the first thing that stands out is Clayton Tune right behind Colt McCoy, but that's the way it's been practiced. So there's nothing there is surprising to you, is there?
No, I mean, not really. You've got, you know, the expectation of McCoy and Tune, and the question becomes, can Tune overtake him? And that's really, I think, the only question at this point is, can Clayton Tune overtake Colt McCoy to begin the season? Not, this isn't, you know, for down the road, just for the season.
Yeah, that's true. And so far, we'll see how that goes. What I found interesting, look at the offensive line, that the offensive line depth chart almost is a perfect match to what we saw or what we see in practice.
I was going to say on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, it really is. Just that. Like, really, the only change is the only flip-flopping I've seen from day to day. The starting five, Humphreys, Wilkinson, Froholt, Hernandez, and Johnson. There we go. There's been a couple of flip-flops. Like, Kelvin Beach is listed at right tackle, Josh Jones at left tackle on the second team. Both of them, like, for a couple of practices or once or twice, have switched sides. Makes sense. There was one day when Pat Elflein, who's number three center, got reps with the number two offense instead of Gaines, and Gaines moved over to right guard. But like both times I was at practice, and this is interesting to me, is that Pat Elflein, who I guess when he was signed, we're like, oh, he's probably the starting center. He's not even surpassing the rookie right now.
And, no, it seems...
and that's okay, because as you know, as starter capable as he is, his biggest problem is, in fact, it's like Marlon Mack. He hasn't been able to stay healthy.
Yeah, and you look at it, I mean, what we said about Elflein was we expected him to start, but it looks like the biggest thing is that he's there kind of a break in case of emergency type of thing, right? Like, there's no reason to bring him in if Froholt or Gaines are doing the job.
Yeah, so and I think that's kind of what it is. Okay, they've liked what Froholt's done in the offseason. Now let's make sure he doesn't goof it up during the preseason.
Yeah, and that's the big thing now.
Looking at nothing surprises me about the receiver depth chart, honestly, because you've got Hollywood, Rondell, and Zach Pascal. That's what we expected. Now, the only thing that's surprising is what they list as their starting offense is they listed with 11 personnel, just one tight end, which that's neither here nor there. When it comes to starts, it's based on your first play. And so they might go, like, that's how you get sometimes like a random backup offensive lineman with a start, because they came in, they their first play, they ran like a jumbo tight end package where they had an extra blocker. Or one time, there was one offensive line the Cardinals had one year who started because the first play he was in as a fullback. So right. Starts are weird, but like that, like your top three, Hollywood, Rondell Moore, Zach Pascal, that makes sense until Michael Wilson can do everything Pascal can. And Pascal's had a great camp. So it's just going to be a matter of time before Wilson surpasses Pascal, I think.
Yeah, and this isn't a shot at anybody else, but Wilson's looked like one of the best players at camp a lot of the time. And that's a good thing. That's what you want, right? You want these guys to come out, play well and things like that. And so it's good to see and good to see him be able to do it throughout camp thus far. And like Gannon said, like the big thing is now doing it when he has to do it against other teams.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's been what we've talked about, the one kind of thing we've said, right? Don't
read too much into when they're playing their teammates.
Right, because it may be the fact that the corners are bad, or it may be the fact that, you know, like we said, like your example all the time is Brandon Williams. and then it ended up being that was actually really bad because that showed that Michael Floyd couldn't play anymore. So we're like, oh crap.
So yeah, like Brandon Williams gets benched after 1 week. Michael Floyd is a disaster that year. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So that's all it takes is, you know, so don't get overly excited. So, but then also it's still the preseason. So don't freak out if he's not the best wide receiver on the field. Like that's okay too. Like we can have the conversation about being somewhere in between there.
I found it interesting that at least with the running backs where they had Marlon Mack, they shoved him all the way at the back. So he came in and signed and had, and does not appear at least right now to have any sort of expectation of making the roster because like on the other side, Jeff Swaim, he's right behind Trey McBride. And so like Swaim was signed with the intention he's going to be on the roster and have a role. Marlon Mack thus far, not maybe so much. No, I was excited. It's a bummer he got hurt because I couldn't wait for the Marlon Mack love in the preseason. Because it was like we had back in 2017, the summer of Blaine Gabbert, when you've got a talented, like a guy who's done it, who's talented. And then because of where he's at in his career, he's now playing in the preseason. You know, Marlon Mack looked great in the red and white practice. But in fairness, he was going against second and third team defense players on the Cardinals roster. And he had fresh legs. It was his first practice after the rest of the team was on a six-day practice week in the second week of training camp. And so, of course, he looked good. Of course, did I write about how Marlon Mack looked good in red and white practice? Of course I did, but I get the caveat. Well, there's reasons why, and I couldn't wait to see him in the preseason to stand out and be like, see, he's ready. He's back. Well, no, he's just, you know, going against second and third teamers. Honestly, just like the summer of Blaine Gabbert was supposed to look like the best player of the field, and he did that. He did exactly what he was supposed to do that preseason.
Exactly.
The defensive side of the ball is interesting. For anything else, for me, defensive line makes no sense at all. It actually doesn't make sense. Like, Rashard Lawrence is listed as the third team nose tackle when he has. Now, I will say this. In the times I've seen practice, the first team defensive linemen, they've been all over. Like, they've had all, like, literally, they don't know what they're doing. Not that they don't know what they're doing, but they don't know who's going to be in there. Because I've seen Jonathan Ledbetter and Rashard Lawrence, I saw the most as, like, the first. Like, they came out as the first team defensive line. They added Leckie Fotu for a package. Then another time was LJ Collier and Eric Banks. They had a Carlos Watkins. I saw a little Kevin Strong, but like a nose tackle, Leckie is the number one, then Kevin Strong, then Rashard Lawrence. And that's the one area where I'm like, this is super interesting as to what the the perception of the offensive line is and the defensive line. Because, one, Carlos Watkins isn't among the best three, and Leki Fotu is.
Yeah, and so we'll see how that works out. It might be one of those situations where, you know, new regime, new coaching style, new way of doing things,
you know,
fits in with Leki a little more, right?
Look at the defensive linemen that they've had there, those big athletic bodies. Now, granted, Leki hasn't done much yet. But,
right.
But when he came out of college, the potential was there. But, like, this is a guy that's 330 pounds and has been as big as 350, but he's 330 and moves extremely well. It's going to be interesting if he's a guy that can unlock. But it's, what's funny is, like, practice reps, he's not – you haven't there's been nothing notable about what he's done. No one said anything about Leki Fotu. I barely noticed he was on the field one of the two practices I was there.
Well, isn't that kind of what it usually looks like?
It's true. Yeah. No, but other than that, it was just interesting to see where Rashard is, because he's been, you know, they kind of raved about him a little bit. He was Monty Austin Fort named in particular Jonathan Ledbetter and Rashard Lawrence when he talked about the defensive line. Ledbetter is a guy that's quietly finding a nice little career. Like, he was kind of their most productive outside of J.J. Watt. And then, like, if there was J.J. Watt, Zach Allen, and there was Jonathan Ledbetter. And, you know, maybe he's got something there. The outside linebackers, Dennis Gardeck and Zaven Collins, and there's no surprise there as they're listed as a starter, because that's how they've been getting their reps. Now, am I surprised that Dennis Gardeck is a first-team outside backer in this defense? I am shocked that it is not Cameron Thomas.
Yeah, so am I. And it's odd that Thomas is listed behind Zaven and not Gardeck, right? So my J being buried third behind
him. Right, behind him and KG.
It must just be from all the injuries, right?
Because
he literally just came back the other day. So
yeah, I think in terms of strong side, weak side, I think that's how they have him listed, because Cam is the bigger bot. Like, he's built like Zaven, and well, you know, Gardeck, he's small, and so you've basically got the way I had to listen is that Zaven was strong side and Gardeck was weak side. And so that's built like that. And so Demakeji, I think, could go either way, but Sanders makes sense as a weak side guy. And then you've got Zaven, Cam Thomas, and BJ Ojulari and Jesse Luketa. There are your bigger guys that you could put strong side and win on that side.
Right. So it'll be interesting to see how these unfold. I think they would really like Collins and a guy we're about to talk about to win these roles, right?
Oh, for sure. Like, yeah. Cam Thomas, BJ Ojulari. Collins, it feels like that's going to be his role, and I hope he's not terrible, because if there's one thing he's never – like, he's got the size, he's got the athleticism, he's got the want to. Dude doesn't have bend.
No, but you also don't need it if you can play that role, like you said, of the strong side guy and be more of a guy that takes everything down.
Yeah, but cornerback, I found a surprise there, because Antonio Hamilton is listed as a starter next to Marco Wilson, but we have not seen Antonio Hamilton practice with the first team at all. It has been, along with Marco, who quietly is cornerback one, is Christian Mathieu and Keytrell Clark. Those are the two guys that have been getting playing time with the first team. It is never Hamilton.
Yeah, and that's why it was so odd, right? Like, we haven't really talked about Hamilton at all, and this guy just shows up as the number two corner out of nowhere, and you're just kind of like, okay.
Like, I know Hamilton's going to be on the roster. His contract's 100% guaranteed. You know, they paid him. It's one and a half.
And he's at least special teams.
Like, he's at least he's going to be solid depth in special teams. He's going to give you a lot. At this point, this is a question. Do you think Garrett Williams is going to come off NFI anytime soon?
It doesn't seem like it. I think he's going to start the year on the the pup, which is what, 6 weeks, 4 weeks?
You know, I think because he's on NFI, he can stay on that indefinitely, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, okay.
Because that's a little bit different because that was a pre-employment injury.
Yeah.
And so it's one of those things, they could, it's one of the dirty secrets of the NFL. You put a guy in NFI,
a little trick.
You cannot pay them. You cannot pay because they got hurt, not
before
on the job.
Yeah.
Now, would they do that with a guy they drafted knowing he had a torn ACL? But he thought he was going to be ready by August. The fact that he hasn't been cleared yet is interesting. I wonder if they're legitimately going to stash him for a year, which would be...
Yeah, and it might be something that they do, which wouldn't be the worst thing, right?
Maybe not, which that for me, that made the selection kind of interesting to begin with. Unless you viewed him as a first or second round talent.
Talent, yeah.
You could do that. I guess nothing really else about the cornerback depth chart surprises me at all. Not really. Chris Boyd is back farther, but Chris Boyd was signed not for his cornerback play, more or less. He's going to probably make the team on special teams.
But we also didn't talk about the inside backers. We probably should mention that.
Oh, that's true. So you've got, now, in fairness, they list Chris Barnes next to Kaiser White. That's real, because that is one of the legitimate position battles, like based on playing time, like reps with the first team. Chris, like, it'll either be Chris Barnes first, then Josh Woods, but they basically alternate series. And that's the same thing with, like, the cornerback position, because it's been Keytrell Clark and Christian Matthew. They literally alternate series, and then the same with the defensive line. And so the fact that Chris Barnes is listed at the top, I think that's more, because I think, like, they did do with the punters, that they're basically 1A, 1B, that they're basically even. I wonder if it's just his NFL starting experience that they put Barnes, the media relations department put Barnes ahead of Woods, because it's felt like, from what I've seen on Twitter, because I haven't been in all the practices, is that Woods usually starts as, like, they usually start with the first team, and then they bring in Barnes for the next series.
Yeah, and so... Again, it's just one of those situations that'll be interesting to kind of follow along and see how it all plays out, because so far it's one of the listings that doesn't follow with what some of the things that we've seen in practice, even if it's practice stuff that we're not reporting on.
Yeah, nothing surprising about the safety position. We know that Budin and Jalen are there, Isaiah Simmons is there, like that's not surprising. What is surprising, and I got the feel for this before, is how close the punting competition is between Nolan Cooley and Matt Hawk. I thought for sure when they signed Hawk that this was a done deal, right? A guy that's always, like, he's never not been an NFL team's punter. Like, he's never been unemployed midseason. Nolan Cooney's not proven anything in the NFL, and it looks like right now that they are, in fact, neck and neck in the battle for punting. They both offer something different, because if Cooney makes the team, he'll do kickoffs instead of Prater. Hawk is a left-footed punter, which adds a little wrinkle, and then obviously both they're going to have to, like, I wonder if how much the holding job will factor in. And, you know, interesting fact, and this was a nugget that I found in the offseason just scouring for stats, because one of the things when the Cardinals signed Matt Prater, we thought, well, what are they going to do about kickoffs? Because he hadn't kicked off regular since 2014. Matt Prater set basically franchise records for touchbacks, like touchback number of touchbacks in his season and for touchback percentage. It's ridiculous. Like, it's ridiculous. For a guy who hadn't been regular kicking off since it was 2014, I believe it was. And so let me look at, like, this is stupid. This is stupid. So he had 107 touchbacks over the last two seasons. In two seasons, he is number 3 all time in franchise history. for touchback percentage. He has the highest touchback percentage at 73.3% of anybody who's played more than two games. That is crazy to me. But he also, like, remember, like last year, he also had the hip injury that kind of affected him. So I wonder if how much the ability for Cooney to kick off will impact the decision on which punter they keep.
Yeah, and that's what you're always curious about as these play out, is like not just the punting aspect, but the holding and things like that, and how it will affect the decision making. Do you think Prater has a say?
I think he probably does, at least a little bit. I think ultimately,
do you think
they will ask him?
I was gonna say, do you think he'll be like, "Hey, I prefer this guy to hold," but you know,
like if there's a significant difference, like they basically say, "Hey, is one guy from what as you as a kicker is one guy far and away better?" And if he's far and away better, and they're even on the punting, okay, that makes sense. If one is the better punter and they're even on holding, well, I guess you go with the guy that's a better punter. Or if Prater's like, "I'd rather not kick off," that's it. I find this battle, it's stupid. It's stupid. It really is. Why am I worrying about the punter, the punting battle? It's because I'm a freaking weirdo and I write about all the details of the team. But this is one of the most intriguing things about this, because you've got a punter they basically have developed with this special teams coaching staff, and a guy that's been proven, like Matt Hawk. There's like, he is a good punter.
Right. He's been a very good punter in the NFL. So it's just interesting that, like you said, it's even a battle, but you know, they're there more than we are. So.
Yeah. Coming up next on the Rise of Seward podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the web. Let's move on and talk about something interesting that Isaiah Simmons said. What do we have to think about that? That's coming up next on Rise of Seward. We're back on the Rise of Seward podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the web, and interesting comments by Isaiah Simmons. Now, I know, like, we know, we expect him to be a better safety than he was a linebacker. I think that's probably fair to say that moving him to linebacker made sense in a lot of ways because of his size, his speed. He did have linebacker-type instincts, but his size and speed and length and coverage ability lended him to a really nice role as a linebacker, and then got used all over the place. There was something he said that made me suggest it. Just, I didn't love it. Okay, this is last to talk about this. So this is what he said in referring to the previous roles that he's had. "There were times where I was playing in a position, maybe because we were down in injuries, or I don't really want to say. There were just certain circumstances that kind of played into me playing some different positions last year as opposed to doing what was best for me. Now I think doing what's best for me is actually best for the team. I just feel a little more free, more like myself and my game." Give me your thoughts on that, because I didn't love it. I didn't love that at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those things for me where I look at it and it tells me that there was never, I shouldn't say never, there was just a disconnect between what the team expected and what his ability to provide was. And when that happens, when you're at odds in that way, it makes it really difficult for you to feel like you're getting a fair shake and you know, for the team to feel like they're getting what they drafted, yeah. Right? And so I understand it from that perspective, because it's just, I don't think it's, I think it's him without necessarily taking a shot at the previous regime, basically saying like, look, this regime, they see me more for what I am, or they'll listen to me more about what I feel like I'm going to be better at for the squad. You know, it's unfortunate that this is where we're at with Isaiah at this point. And, you know, I don't blame Isaiah. You know, he's not free from blame, but at the same time, like, you know, it's not his fault. And it's just one of those situations.
I don't like when players, for me, because he embraced openly, publicly playing lots of different roles. Like, that was a badge of honor for him. And then to say, I didn't, what they asked me to do wasn't really, and then obviously football's a team sport. The Cardinals were in a situation last year where he was their best option at slot corner, hands down. And the truth is, he was fine. He was fine, except for week one when he, and admittedly, was unprepared. The whole team was unprepared, playing bad technique for whatever reason, got in the doghouse, and in week one played very poorly against Travis Kelce, the Chiefs, but so many people do that anyway. From that week forward, his role in the slot, he wasn't exposed. And he was covering all the guys in the slot. We're not just talking tight ends. We're talking running backs that would flex slot receivers. And so, you know, obviously, that wasn't his best thing, but it was what the team needed most from him, because they found themselves in a really sticky situation at cornerback when Jeff Gladney died. And then they didn't, they needed Byron to play border. They needed him to play boundary. And then Antonio Hamilton got hurt, you know, got burned. And so it was a case where they honestly only had two cornerbacks that they trusted to begin with. And that was Marco. That was Byron and Antonio. Then maybe three Marco, because they soured a little bit on Marco early, but not a lot. They basically was saying that Antonio outplayed him the whole time. They only had three guys that they trusted. They had a guy die, they had a guy get burned, and so they had to have Isaiah in the slot. And so this happens on every NFL team, especially when you're a versatile player, a talented flex, like positionless almost, like, you're going to get put where the team needs you most, and maybe that's not the best thing for you. And maybe it's because of the blowback that he feels from fans for not being a star. There's nothing wrong about what the Cardinals did last year. The defense needed him to play slot, because if he played linebacker and someone else played slot in that system, it didn't work. Now this year was interesting. We've always heard that Jalen Thompson could cover the slot. He is their slot guy. It's like this coaching staff really likes that element of JT's game more than what Vance Joseph and his defense want. Or maybe it was simply because they loved his reliability on the back end more than they liked his ability to cover in the slot.
Yeah, and, you know, it's one of those situations where, again, I think you look at a guy like Simmons, and he was being asked to do a lot without having success. And that starts to weigh on guys. That starts to weigh on them feeling like, you know, are they being utilized incorrectly? Are they not getting the opportunities they deserve? There's a lot of things that play into that. And so for me, I think that's where it comes into, is that it's just, you look at it, they had opportunities and it just didn't work out for whatever reason. And it's unfortunate. But at the end of the day, you know, I feel like obviously Vance Joseph is in a different place now. The Cardinals are in a different place, different, you know, going about things a different way. So you just look at it and you have to think that it's for the better of everybody right now, as opposed to...
Yeah, and it makes sense. And it does make, you know, playing linebacker was probably a more difficult task than what he's being asked to do as a safety. Safety, you need to make some plays. But
and it was one of the things that I've talked about from the beginning is that I feel like too often we got caught up in this whole situation, right? Of like, oh, he's so versatile. And it's like, it took this dude 3 years to become something at Clemson playing college football. I don't think people realize that extraordinary jump that then we were asking him to make as an NFL player to do multiple things. And again, at the end of the day, he wasn't good at one thing, right? So like, he never got a chance to be good at one and then carry on to the next.
And
so,
that is the strategy for this team. Granted, he's only got 1 year left on his deal. So if he was like, maybe his role will expand. And it's funny that he says he feels more free. Of course it is. He's playing a free safety position. There is far less. There's a lot more freedom you have on the back end as long as you're roughly where you're supposed to be. A linebacker playing the wrong leverage in the middle of the defense or having rushing the wrong gap, like that role messes things up more than now. If Isaiah isn't as reliable on the back end as Jalen Thompson was, that leads to big plays. And it turned like that's what instead of a 10 to 15 yard play, it's a touchdown. And that's one thing that Vance Joseph loved about Jalen Thompson is he tackled so well. And when there was a mistake, it was only a 15-yard mistake because he would take care of that. So it'll be interesting to see. But I just personally didn't love that because it felt like, you know, like, why are you dumping on the last? Like, you embraced those roles. You wanted that challenge. And sure, now it's easier, but you're being asked to do. You are being asked to do far less than you were asked to do before because either they don't believe as much in you or don't want to overburden you, or they, you know, it was evident that, or maybe they never, like, it feels like they never saw him as a linebacker when there were a lot of people in the NFL who did see him as a potential linebacker.
Yeah, and that's just what it is. And again, I think it just comes down to seeing that a player isn't having the success and then scaling back as opposed to adding more when he's not having the success, right?
Yeah, makes sense. I mean, I don't have any problem. Like, I just didn't love the way it came across. Like, it was almost like he was complaining about his role. I'm like, dude, you wanted to play everywhere. Now, granted, maybe slot wasn't what you wanted to do, but guess what? They didn't have a better option in the slot last year, unfortunately. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, anything else you want to bring up?
No, it's just exciting. I mean, we get the first look at the new regime in preseason. It's going to be completely useless and awful and not mean anything in the long term, but it is fun that we have real football coming up.
Yep, on a Friday night, you know, so much for date night. We'll be watching the football game.
Right, exactly.
But with that, we'll end this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, best of Cardinals Talk and Web, episode 449. I will be on in the next couple of days to do another show, smaller show, before the preseason game, kind of what to watch, things like that, so on and so forth, any other news. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. This is the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast. Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.